Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Listen up. This is the Rose. Rose Colombo right here for you, God willing, every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. in the good old USA, but can be heard online around the world at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. And you can always scroll back. Many of the shows are archived. You can come back and listen to your favorite author, expert, and topic, from love to crime to politics to the Constitution to the Mafia, you name it, we got it. Used to be on AM, FM radio, and now we have podcasts where you can reach people around the world 24/7. What a miracle that is, as long as we don't get suppressed, oppressed, and depressed from presenting that information. Seems to be a real problem around the world today. So we got to laugh, because laughter is good for you, and it's healthy for you, and it, you know, that it creates less wrinkles to laugh than to frown. So might as well laugh at life and what's happening in life, because we all have our ups and downs, right? Well, I bet our former presidents are turning around in their graves, and I'm going to tell you why in just a moment. But first, I want to let you know we have a very special guest, a dynamic guest today. She is an established award-winning writer of books, about 40 books, and movie scripts. She was born in the Windy City of Chicago. You know, we formerly know Chicago as my kind of town, and fortunately, I was able to visit Chicago when it was a really fun town that you wanted to say, this is my kind of town. And Sarita Stevens has always been a writer, and I will add, a very successful writer. You can also find and read more about her online. She's a forensic nurse, and if you don't know what a forensic nurse is, she's going to tell us. And she's written, again, about 40 intriguing books, and her latest is Logan's Land. And we're going to be talking to Sarita Stevens in just a little bit. But let me tell you what's happening in the USA as they're kicking out God, the Ten Commandments, the Bible, Christian foundation based on principles and values and morals and ethics, traditional marriage, and all the rest that we've known for 244 years. Well, America was founded and built on faith in God by our former presidents and framers. The Declaration of Independence is coming up on July 4th, 1776. It is Independence Day, and it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And John Adams, America's second president, stated, quote, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. And then we have Thomas Jefferson, great president, author of America's Declaration of Independence, America's third president, who stated, God gave us life, gave us liberty. Can the liberties of a nation be secure when we have removed a conviction that these liberties are the gift of God? Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever. And General George Washington, America's first president, this is his quote, while we are zealously performing the duties of good citizens and soldiers, we certainly ought not to be inattentive to the higher duties of religion, to the distinguished character of patriot. It should be our highest glory to add the more distinguished character of Christian General George Washington, America's first president. And it goes on, and I can tell you some more of those quotes as we get closer to the 4th of July celebration. Great, great day for America. We must never, never stop celebrating the 4th of July Independence Day. And on that note, we have, again, I'll tell you a little bit more about our very special guest coming up, Sarita Stevens. She was born in Chicago. She's a registered nurse. She came out to Los Angeles when offered a teaching job at USC. And with her master's degree in writing with honors from Antioch University in London, England, she went on to become a well-known in the romance and mystery field. Working as an investigative reporter for CBS Chicago, she helped discover a hospital in northern suburb who pretended to heal cancer patients with falsified alternative methods. Quite a lady, indeed, quite a writer, award-winning writer. And she's going to discuss her latest book, Logan's Land. And you won't want to miss this interview because she's also going to bring us some tips and information if you are an aspiring writer or you are a writer and want to improve your writing skills. She's going to give us some tips on that as well. And can you make money at writing? We're going to ask her that question as well. So don't touch that dial because we're going to be back in just a minute to talk to Sarita Stevens.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up because now we're about to enter into the world of authors and experts. And today's author and expert is Sarita Stevens, award-winning writer and movie script writer as well. So let's say hello to Sarita. Hi, Sarita. How are you today? And
hi
welcome
there.
To Columbo
Good to talk
Chronicles.
To you again, Rose.
Good to talk to you,
hi
too,
there.
Sarita. Hey, Sarita. I've told the audience a little bit about your background. I don't know if you want to add anything. Be my guest to do that. But I do know that you do write, I think you've written about 40 books and movie scripts.
Yes.
I know that there is.
And I'm also a forensic nurse. And I help. I'm a consultant on several shows about for the medical poison and forensic questions.
Fantastic. So we have a lot to talk about. And I know there's a difference between books and scripts. So you're going to be talking about that at the Southern California Book Publicists this evening on Zoom.
Yes, tonight I'm going to be talking about that, helping people understand the difference and how they can do both and, you know, what they need to do to change the book to make it a better script.
That's fantastic, because that's not an easy thing to do.
Most people can't do it. They think they can, but it's a whole different type of writing. It's a different muscle that you use when you're writing a script than when you're writing a book, because books are more thoughtful, and you can get into the characters' minds and heads and do various subplots and various point of views, whereas the script is more straightforward. You're following one person mainly, and it's more action-oriented, and everything has to be visual. No thoughts.
A lot of novelists become
very wordy when they're writing their script, because they don't understand that it less is more when you're writing a script.
And so that is a tough one for most writers to do. So
yes, it is.
Your recent book is Logan's Land, and it's a little bit different from other Westerns. What is it about, and how is it different?
Well, it's a Western suspense with romantic elements, but it's told from a female viewpoint. I was in Montana doing autographings, and I fell in love with the countryside, and I learned about the robber barons who started taking over the land from the farmers, and about the start of the Treasury Department becoming the FBI, how Teddy Roosevelt started them, and I decided, since I'd written Gothics before, I decided to do it from a female viewpoint, and I think it made it more interesting. You know, I've written the script for it too, and that's been optioned a couple times, so we'll see what happens.
That's fantastic, and it's very timely, because our land is being taken away from us even today, so that is
very timely.
Indeed. So that's an exciting book, and it sounds like it would be a great, exciting movie as well.
So I hope so.
So is Logan's Land something that both men and women would enjoy?
I believe so. I have a lot of adventure in it, a lot of the Western material in it, and there's a romance that the women would enjoy. I try to, again, in novels you can talk more about feelings and emotions. I mean, you want emotions in scripts, but it has to be visual. And in the novel you can really explore people's emotions much better, and also from other viewpoints as well.
That's true. So it's still going to be exciting, though. I mean, everybody loves romance, especially the women.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I have bar fights. I have, you know, all sorts of different things that I think the guys will like.
So what about the – I know you're a forensic nurse, which most people have never heard of, so you might want to explain a little bit about what is a forensic nurse and what they do. And also are they different than just a regular RN?
Oh, very much so. When I was growing up, there was a book series called Cherry Ames, and she was like Nancy Drew, but she was a nurse, Cherry Ames, student nurse, Cherry Ames, clinic nurse, and she'd be solving crimes while she was taking care of patients. And I wanted to do that so badly, and that's why I went into nursing. And, of course, nursing was nothing like that, but then I stumbled on somebody how to handle sleuth RN, and I found out about forensic nursing. Now, the forensic nurses started helping people with sexual assault and rape exams because they realized that the rape victims weren't getting proper treatment, and especially ones that didn't have outward injuries to be seen. So a group of nurses started with that, but now we do death investigation, we do trauma, we do workman's comp, elder abuse, child abuse. I work a lot with domestic violence victims. I'm also an expert witness for psychiatric cases, for helping attorneys with their psychiatric cases and problems. We are in the hospitals, we're independent, and we're still fighting the old boy system because many doctors resent us taking their patients when we're doing the exams, and police don't even, and even though we help police, we're trained how to collect evidence and how to testify in court. And most nurses do not know how to collect evidence probably or how to testify in court. So it's a unique type of nursing that needs more exposure. My TV series on that has been optioned by Wolper Productions, they have a showrunner, and they're taking it around to various networks, and hopefully we'll have a TV show about it pretty soon.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. And I'll be watching for sure. So, you know, as an advocate for justice, that's right up my alley. So,
oh, yeah.
What are some of the other projects you have in the hopper?
Well, I'm finishing up a story called The Unborn Witness because many people don't realize that the fetus in utero, in the mom's body, can experience emotions and hear things in the last few months. And babies have been known to be born to be able to repeat words and songs that they heard, you know, years ago when they were in utero. And in this story, the little girl had heard her mother's murder, and 18 years later, she now can identify the killer and goes back to the town where she was born and tries to find out who killed her mother. And, of course, he doesn't want anybody around, and now he's got to kill her off, too.
Wow.
I just finished also a true crime that I helped with investigation where a woman was accused of killing her son, and she was actually set up by her mob-related ex-husband. And unfortunately, the police were paid off as well as the attorneys, and so she served time. But the story is a really compelling story about how justice was not served in that case.
Yeah,
and I have other
problem.
Things that I'm working on.
Very timely too, because too many times justice isn't served, and it causes a lot of pain and suffering for families and individuals and victims.
Oh, definitely,
so,
definitely. Well, that's why I started writing mysteries, because I started out with historical romances, but I realized that the hero in historical romance was actually an abusive personality. You will do this or else. I'll put you over my knee type of thing, controlling. And so I started writing mysteries because there's justice in mystery, even though there's not always justice in real life.
For sure. So what can you tell the writers out there, or aspiring writers? What are your tips to them? Should they go to school? Should they take classes? Should they
write in their spare time? Even with all the writing I've done, I still constantly take classes because some people have tips and things that can help me, or I might hear somebody saying, why don't you do this? And I forgot to do this on my character. You can learn on your own if you read a lot. The types of books you read are the type of books that you can start writing the best, because through osmosis, each genre has its own tropes and its own beats that have to be touched on while you're writing that series. And so you have to understand what encompasses a sci-fi, what encompasses a murder mystery, what encompasses a romance, and to try and stick with that. But everybody has their own guidelines. Each publisher has their own guidelines, so you have to find out what the publisher is looking for, and you have to do your homework and say, what's being sold now? I had one gothic romance that went around 20 times and several times to the same publisher before they bought it, because it wasn't my writing. It was what was being sold right then. And they have to realize that really characters are the most important thing. Develop good characters, and the plot will come of who the character is. I really like to have well-developed bio on each of my characters, and and all their backstories, even though stuff might not appear in the story, the fact that you know them and can predict what they're doing makes it all the more interesting for the reader to understand who it is. And they can, the universal theme that you write about the characters and the emotion can be portrayed to the reader. So,
exactly. And sometimes people, at least when I was first writing and I tried to write a fictional romance story, but the characters became real in my head.
Yeah, of course they do.
It was like watching a movie.
They start talking to you.
Yeah.
They start talking to you.
It was quite an experience. It was exciting, actually. And
Yeah,
it was really exciting because they became very important to me.
Right.
Even though they were fictional, they were real in my head, you know. It was quite an experience.
It is. I remember one time I was writing one book and I went out of my house and I was crying and my neighbor asked what was wrong and I said, Alexander's dead. That was the name of the cat. You know, and he didn't understand why I was crying because it was just a story, but it's not just a story. You relive everything. You need to be as emotional about your stories as you want the reader to be. And
yes,
it's not going to turn them on.
That's true. That's a good point, too, and a good thing to remember. And I even had based one character on someone I knew, and her name was June, but I called her Jane in the book. And when I went to dinner to her house, I kept calling her Jane. She goes, "Why are you calling me Jane?"
Oh, my gosh, really? Oh, wow.
I said, "I'm sorry, June." Oh, my goodness.
But, you know,
it's
very hard when we pattern characters after people we know because then we say, what's going to happen when they see this, you know? So
well,
I usually do a combination of several people.
Yeah, but the thing was that, you know, there was something about her parts of this character that, you know, I related to her, and it was just a weird thing. But can you actually make money writing books?
Well, at one time you could. These days everything is, not everything, there's the five big publishers and they really are very careful who they take on. The majority of publishers these days are independent publishers and they don't usually pay advances like the big time publishers used to pay. And you're lucky to get royalties, but the writer today has to do a lot more self-publicity and getting the word out themselves. You can't just sit at the desk and write a good story. You have to get out there and network and talk to people about your books and sell them on your own. The publishers these days will not do as much publicity for you as they used to do in the past for their authors. And in fact, my parents, when I said I wanted to be a writer, said you can be a nurse or a teacher because you're not going to make a living as a writer. And it's true. I think only 1 or 2% of people make actual living as a writer, both in scripts or in novels. It's not easy. You have to write because you really love writing, not because you want to make money at it. And don't write romances because romances are selling if you don't believe in your story itself. The money you make often just goes back into your own supplies and stuff like that. So don't go into it thinking you're going to make a lot of money. Go into it because you want to educate people and you want to entertain people.
Yeah, it's a passion, basically.
It has to be a passion for you. You have stories that's burning in you that you want to tell.
I think the story
I told you before about the unborn witness, because I deal a lot with domestic violence as a forensic nurse, and I want that story to come out. And so, you know, I have passion about that project, and it comes across when I'm pitching it, but to the producers and stuff like that. But you have to really understand your story and your character, and really, because you're going to live with that story for a long time.
True. And so what about, like, people who want to write movie scripts like you do and they want to pitch their story? Do they need to get an agent? Do they need to get
Yes.
What do they need to do?
Most of the time, most of the producers will not look at you unless you have an agent or a manager, or sometimes they'll accept an entertainment attorney. I'm actually associated with a group called RoadmapWriters.com, and it's run by my friend Joey Tuscio, and he helps a lot of writers get representation and has like classes that helps them along when you can meet execs and things like that. It's an excellent group. And some of these people just take your money and don't really give you any benefit for it. But RoadmapWriters.com really does a lot for the writers.
Can anyone join, or do they have to have a book, or they have to have?
No. You can be working on a book. You can be. They have an author section and they have a script section.
Is that Roadmap?
R-O-A-D-M-A-P. Writers.com.
All right, people, now you heard Serena Stevens.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent group.
Yeah, I got a great group there.
It is.
So, yeah, it sounds like it because, you know, it's not that simple just to write a book and then it's not that simple to get it published and get it on a bookshelf.
It's very difficult to get it published, and a lot of people are doing self-publishing these days, and that's fine and good, but most of the self-publishers aren't edited properly, and they don't know how to market it. You have to do so much more of the business stuff when you're self-publishing. You have to think about the marketing and the cover design and commissions and how to get it out there and publicity, whereas the publisher is supposed to do that for you, but not always. You still have to work at some things, but nevertheless, it's not as hard if you have a publisher behind you.
Yeah, but you have to, you know, most people will have to get out there and try to market themselves and their book as well. And, I mean, even some of your very famous writers who are in TV shows and stuff and they write a book, they still go to bookstores, Barnes & Noble, and they do book signings.
You do autographings and stuff like that. You have to call those stores up and arrange autographings yourself. And like tonight, I'm speaking at Book Publicists, and you know, he gets me a lot of TV shows and radio shows and things like that. And you have to be willing to put yourself out there so people get to know who you are and mentor other writers as they're coming along as well, and pay it forward.
Exactly, because life is about giving and not just taking. It's about giving.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I believe that, too. I believe that, you know, we're here on a mission, and we can either be takers or givers or both, you know. I mean, we can give, and then we get back. So
exactly.
I know you wrote a workbook for writers of books and scripts, and you wrote both of those, so tell us about them.
Yes, the Ultimate Writer's Workbook. Actually, I'm actually revising it and adding more things to it right now for the second edition. I think there's still some copies at Amazon, but I am doing a second version right now, which I think will include a lot more great little tidbits for writers. The fact is, as I said, you know, the scripts are the same as novels because you need a great story, great characters, great location. But the scripts, there's a time crunch on the scripts. You can only usually condense time, and it has to be done mostly from one viewpoint. You have to think about the budget, too, when you're writing a script. You don't want crowd scenes, you know, unless you, you know, have a lot of money behind you. You want to think about the budget for children and animals. Again, those are more expensive when you're writing a script. So the higher the budget, the harder it's going to be to sell your script.
That's very true. So if people do have a sellable script, it doesn't always mean, even though it's a great script, that it's going to get on the big screen, right?
Absolutely. And these days, a lot of the producers are looking for extremely commercial things. And, you know, I think my stuff is commercial, but they say a lot of my stuff is indie. like for small theaters and stuff like that. So you have to look at what you're writing and what's the universal theme about what you're writing and how can it relate to people across the globe. For this comedy does not travel well because most of the money these days for films comes from overseas, and American comedy doesn't relate well overseas. And same thing overseas. British comedy is totally different. We don't react the same way to British comedy. So you have to understand what you're writing and what's being sold and do your homework.
Yeah, there's a whole educational process that you have to do because, that you can't just think that, oh, this is so funny, everybody is going to love it. Well, no, not everybody is going to love it.
Right.
And then you're limiting your marketing, too, if you don't do your homework and read books like your Ultimate Writer's Workbook, read books that you publish with all this information to help guide people. And everything that you do need to do research and homework on it and take classes and not think that, hey, you know, this is great, this is perfect. I mean, as writers, I mean, I've written things and then even post online and then I go back and go, did I write that?
Also, this is a network industry. This is a relationship industry. And you need to network as much as you can, like women in film and Hollywood networking breakfast, breaking into Hollywood, because you have to get to meet people because they like seeing you face-to-face or even with Zoom meetings as well. I mean, you know, that's a possibility now. We've gotten used to Zoom things. But people want to know who you are. They want to know why you wrote something. What's the passion behind it? Are you the right person to write this? Why are you the person to write this? You know, what makes you so special that you have this story? And that's something you have to convince people because there's a lot of stories that are similar in the atmosphere, and an executive might hear the same sort of story two and three times in the same week, but it's how you presented the characters and what you talk about yourself and your passion for the story that will sell the project more so than the project itself.
Yes, and I also heard that when you do give your pitch to a producer that sometimes your story turns out totally different on the screen.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Most book writers think that Hollywood's just waiting for their books, and they're really not. Especially with all the self-published books out there. So when they say they want an IP, intellectual property, it's nice to have publish your story beforehand, but if it doesn't have a backing behind it, if it hasn't been a bestseller, it really doesn't mean as much. That's why you have to get out there and do social media, LinkedIn and Twitter and stuff like that and get people to know who you are. And talk about your stories.
Oh, excellent point. And so tonight you are one of the experts that are going to be speaking out at Irwin Zucker's Southern California Book Publicity Club. And so do you want to tell the people a little bit more about what you'll be doing?
I'll be talking about the difference between books and scripts and how you can do both and what you have to be careful and what you have to look out for. The person who runs the book division at Roadmap Writers will also be talking about things there. There'll be several producers on the line as well. I don't remember all the names. I think there's like seven or eight people talking tonight besides myself. And it is free for anybody to join on. If you go to Southern California Book Publicists, I think that's their website, Erin's website. But there is a Zoom link there for people to click on there for tonight's episode. It's at 6:30 Pacific time. It starts. Just join us.
Fantastic. And I'm sure a lot of people will join. And they can also join the Irwin Zucker.
The Book Publisher Society. He gets a lot of interesting guests.
He does. He's an interesting person.
Mm-hmm. He's an interesting person himself, Erwin, yes.
Exactly.
I think he's like, is he like 92 or something? I don't know. He's very spry for his age.
He is very spry for his age, and it's amazing how much energy he has as well.
I know.
It's passion,
I know.
Again. We go back to passion, right?
Again, passion, yeah.
Passion,
he
for
loves
life,
helping
passion
writers.
For reading and writing and producing, absolutely. And so do you believe that that you absolutely should seek out an agent, or do you like if you keep getting rejections, or should you?
I would get a manager. Well, in books, you don't need a manager. Managers don't usually help me with books. The managers help with scripts, and managers are more hands-on. They will help you mold your story sometimes, and they have fewer clients because they really do more one-on-one. An agent's more concerned about what you're selling and what you can give him. Many agents will not take you on if you haven't already sold something.
Okay.
And it can be very frustrating to get to know people. And as I said, Roadmap for Writers introduces a lot of people to various managers, and Joey has been successful in getting 176 people so far represented in the past,
that's
I think,
amazing.
5 years he's been going. Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yes. And, well, congratulations to Joey. I don't know Joey, but congratulations to Joey. That's amazing.
He'd be a great
and,
person for you to talk to.
Yes, I would love to talk to him. And so, Sarita, what do you have on the fire right now? Anything that you think is going to happen soon that we should look forward to?
Well, as I said, the Forensic Nurse TV series, I call it Nursing the Evidence because I think we take care of evidence. We don't doctor it, if you understand. And so, but I don't know if they're going to change the title or not. You know, when you give your stuff to a producer, you just never know what's going to happen after it and how it's going to change and things like that. You have to be willing to – scripts are a team player because you're dealing not only with the producers, with the actors, directors, and everybody's got their own idea of what your story should be like. Whereas in writing books, you are more independent. You can write alone, and all you need is the editor to say, okay, this is a great story. So, again, it's a whole different way of looking at things when you are writing.
Mm. Yes, that's such important information. I appreciate it, too. And as we wind up now, it's your time to shine, and you can give our audience a message, and you can also tell them where they can find you, your websites, and your books.
Okay. So my website is saritastevens.com, SERITASTEVNS.com. I'm also at IMDb, if you have that, Sarita D. Stevens. And Amazon has a lot of my books, but they're all over in many bookstores and in Barnes & Noble and even in the library as well. I think libraries are starting to open up again, finally. It's great.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being our guest today and giving us such invaluable information. And I hope everyone turns into Book Publicists of Southern California this evening on Zoom at 6:30 p.m., I believe it is, Pacific Standard Time. Okay, perfect.
Yes.
And can they ask questions, or is it just listening?
Yeah, I believe there will be a time to ask questions. Yes, I do.
Oh, fantastic. Well, okay, then hopefully I'll see you at 6:30 this evening, and the audience will as well. Once again, thank you so much, and have a blessed day.
Thank you, Rose. Lovely meeting you. Stay safe.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Sarita Stevens has left the building, and be sure to check out all her books, including Logan's Land, her latest book. Watch for her Ultimate Writer's Workbook coming up, edition 2. I can't wait for that, and I bet you can't either if you have a desire to write or you are a writer. And on that note, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to enter into the world of the cries from around the world that affect America and the rest of the world, because everything that happens in America affects the rest of the world. So don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. Be sure to bring your appetite to the Horseshoe Cafe.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Yes, and now we're going to enter into the world of politics. So here we go. On Zero Hedge, this is an interesting article. It says, who highly compromised, who, World Health Organization, highly compromised, unfit to lead COVID-19 investigation, according to the former CDC director, by Tyler Durden. The World Health Organization is highly compromised and unfit to lead an investigation into the origins of COVID-19, according to former CDC head Robert Redfield. He says, clearly they were incapable of compelling China to adhere to the treaty agreements that they have on global health because they didn't do that. Redfield told Fox News on Tuesday, clearly, they allowed China to define the group of scientists that could come and investigate. That's not consistent with their role. In March, Redfield told CNN that he doesn't believe the natural origin theory, which posits that COVID-19 jumped from a bat to a human through a yet-to-be-determined intermediary species. He said, I think they were highly compromised. Redfield said of the World Health Organization, WHO, like the L, WHO, which investigated the origins of the pandemic in what was nothing more than a political theater conducted by a highly conflicted group, one of whom, Peter Daszak of NGO Echo Health Alliance, worked with a Wuhan Institute of Virology and was funded to the tune of millions of dollars by the one and only Dr. Anthony Fauci's NIH. Redfield slammed Fauci during the interview, saying that while he supports the lab leak hypothesis, other individuals, Tony Fauci, for example, would say that he prefers to support that it evolved from nature. Now, why would that be, asked Redfield, adding that sometimes scientists, when they bite into a bone on a hypothesis, it's hard for them to move on. He said, I guess if I'm disappointed about anything about the early scientific community is that there seemed to be a lack of openness to pursue both hypotheses, he continued. So that's a really stark and bold statement and about the WHO organization, World Health Organization, and about Dr. Fauci. So I thought you might find that intriguing as well. And then we have another interesting piece here. It says, Israel Unwired. Did the FBI organize the riots on January 6th? Well, that's an intriguing question, right? Many questions remain about the Capitol Hill riots on January 6th. One of the most pressing unanswered questions is the role that the FBI played in pushing the protesters forward into the Capitol building. Tucker Carlson interviewed Darren Beatty from Revolver News about the issues surrounding the January 6th Capitol Hill riots. Beatty explains that it is known that the FBI had infiltrated many of the groups alleged to be behind the Capitol Hill riots. With many members sitting in jail, Beatty wants to know, to what extent were the FBI agents involved and let off? The answer to that question will open the real possibility of exposing the involvement of the FBI in influencing the riots. They went from insurrection to riots. The problem is that the video footage of the Capitol Hill riots is still being held by the Biden administration. This only adds to the suspicions that it was, in fact, the deep state itself which framed the right-wing protesters on January 6th, the article states. If this is true, the security apparatus will be forced to clean house and accept a degree of transparency. More than that, exposing the FBI's involvement essentially proves the Trump narrative on almost everything, which is why the deep state administration is so involved in covering it up. And this article was by Israel Unwired, which is a rather intriguing article. And let's move on to, this is a really mind-boggling article. It's by the Gateway Pundit by Jill Hoft, and it's dated May 31st, 20. Got a map of the coronavirus, COVID-19, and how it was to be spread. And it says, by Lawrence Sellin and Anna Chen, it was all part of the People's Liberation Army's, the PLA, biowarfare plan against the United States of America. The design of COVID-19 was based on a number of bioweapon features, in particular, highly contagious, low lethality, and a high rate of asymptomatic transmission. And then it has a little map that says CCP virus, unrestricted bioweapon. How dangerous is this? Features: 1, highly contagious; 2, low lethality; 3, significantly virulent; 4, temperature insensitive; 5, high rate of asymptomatic transmission; 6, resistant to environmental changes; 7, destructive power are unprecedented. Pre-planned. Another important feature of a PLA bioweapon, not mentioned on that list, is disguising its origin. That is the capability of avoiding responsibility for a biowarfare attack by designing a virus that could be blamed on a natural outbreak. So basically, threatening us with nukes after unleashing a bioweapon on America and the world, which appears to be pre-planned, is reason enough for the world's human rights courts to take action and bring China to court. Chang Jung Wang, a high-ranking officer in the PLA's Eastern Theater Command, headquartered in Nanjing, was responsible for the isolation of the bat coronavirus ZC45, and that is, 45 is President Trump's number as President of the United States. He's also referred to as 45. That's interesting. And ZXC21 and 21 is the number for the United Nations Agenda 21 to reduce the population by 50% by 2021, which was this year. And this is the year that they're attempting to mandate the experimental and trial so-called vaccination with an alleged gene therapy that allegedly can alter your DNA and has never been tried on human beings under consent or animals as for short and long-term case studies to publish the direct adverse health effects on human beings immediately, short-term, or long-term, which has always been the policy in the past for vaccinations by the FDA, who fast-tracked this emergency experimental vaccine with new technology never used on human beings before and with unknown consequences. And as we know, there are many reports of people dying after they're vaccinated, or they have an allergic reaction, or they have pre-existing conditions, weak immune systems, and taking other medications while they're jabbing people with a weapon, which is a needle with a myriad of chemicals and a new technology with unknown consequences on individual people, human beings. The United States Constitution prohibits anyone, including the FDA, knowing there's a 99.8% and 99.9% recovery rate from the flu known as COVID, and that we have many, many viruses linked to the coronavirus in our bodies, and that's why we have an immune system, and we need healthy cells to keep the immune system healthy and the organs and the brain, which requires free fresh air, free oxygen, breathing into your mouth and releasing carbon monoxide continuously 24/7. And that is why God created us with a mouth and a nose, and also keeps the saliva intact so that we don't get gum disease, lose our teeth, and end up with gum disease invading our bloodstream and dying, or contracting bacterial pneumonia from wearing 1, 2, and 3 masks long-term, 24/7, and a plastic shield over our faces, and staying in the house locked down without sunshine, which provides vitamin D and makes people happy and healthy to be in the sunshine. And then not disclosing that HCQ, as doctors say, they use HCQ in the past, and they have case studies with HCQ, vitamin C, and zinc, and other items they use, products they use to cure COVID. And there is a virology journal where Dr. Fauci and other doctors state that HCQ was a miracle drug, and that it cured COVID, and I believe it was published in 2015. And then there's ivermectin, and there is remdesivir that other doctors internationally are saying, and Mexico are using, stating that it is curing COVID. And yet we are still plagued with this vaccination with new technology with unknown consequences on individual human beings. And the truth is that if it was a cure, people wouldn't be dying. People wouldn't be getting blood clots. People wouldn't be getting heart inflammation and all the other allegations made online that are happening to people, including palsy and other issues. So which is safer, HCQ with C and vitamin zinc, as doctors in the past have used, ivermectin that they're using today, remdesivir that President Trump used, because Dr. Fauci said getting the vaccine doesn't mean you won't get COVID. So what's the point? And in 1918, during that Spanish flu, people weren't dying from the Spanish flu as much as they were dying from bacterial pneumonia and tuberculosis caused by wearing masks long term and not getting enough fresh, free oxygen that God provided for humanity. And they were also not getting any vitamins and minerals because 60% of the population was poor, living in poverty and undernourished. And people in deserts were dying because they didn't have air conditioning or clean water in many areas, and even enough water or to take care of their health, or enough food, or in freezing areas, they were freezing to death because they didn't have heat and they didn't have hot water and clean water in many of those areas because they didn't have the modern day plumbing and electricity we have today, or the abundance of food until 2019, when suddenly Lysol was unavailable, alcohol was unavailable, hydrogen peroxide was unavailable, the prices were skyrocketing if you did find a bottle, Clorox was unavailable, toilet paper was unavailable, paper towels were unavailable. You could only buy one loaf of bread in America. The land, you could only buy one box of Rice-A-Roni. Did you know that? So all of these items that were staples in America suddenly became scarce. The truckers were hurt. They could not even find a place to go eat their lunch because everything was shut down, all the restaurants, and they couldn't go through a drive-thru because it's not allowed. And so they suffered a lot, and they lost a lot of business, and they couldn't deliver the food and the products into the areas where they needed to be delivered or to the restaurants. And the farmers were hurt, and the ranchers were hurt. And then Bill Gates came along and bought up all the farms that were hurt, probably for undervalue, because the farmers had to kill their chickens, their pigs, and so forth, because they couldn't go to market. So this is a very serious situation for America, that these people who decided to shut down America and lock down Americans inside their homes as if we're criminals and committed a crime, if you might get the flu or you did have the flu, you're now basically a criminal locked in your home because you either could get sick or you could spread a flu. So this is the first time in U.S. history this has happened, and it should never, ever happen. We have doctors on every corner. We have cures. It's a 99.8% to 99.9% cure. Mask, according to the 1918 Health Department, did not cure the flu, but ventilation and sunshine and fresh air and proper nutrition and clean water helped. And it became an endemic. So when Major General Chen Wei, presumed head of China's biowarfare program, took control of the cleanup operation in Wuhan after local authorities lost control of the COVID-19 outbreak, Chen Wei was part of her team, even though he was from the PLA Eastern Theater Command. And outside of the PLA Central Theater Command, which had jurisdiction over Wuhan. In September 2020, Cheng Zhengwang was awarded the National Medal and Honor for his role connected to COVID-19 by the Chinese Communist Party leader Xi Jinping. Chen Zhengwang was not only interested in bat coronaviruses that could infect humans, but how viral respiratory infections spread, especially by individuals not showing symptoms of the disease, that is, asymptomatically. Cheng Zhengwang extensively studied andovirus respiratory infections among PLA soldiers, and in 2016 created epidemiological models, including how such viral respiratory infections could spread from China to the United States of America. Epidemiology and transmission characteristics of human adenovirus type 7 caused acute respiratory disease outbreak in military trainees in East China. Except for the Chinese Communist Party and its sympathizers, everyone should now be convinced that the COVID-19 virus was made in a laboratory and was part of the People's Liberation Army's biowarfare program. And you can read this entire article on the Gateway Pundit exclusive in 2016, a Chinese military officer. Hold on. Key to COVID-19's origin mapped virus spread to the United States of America. How is it that the government, social media, MSM, is not talking about this? It is very serious, and we need to do something about it. We need to get back to normal. We need to restore the Constitution of the USA. We need to restore sovereignty, vetting of anyone entering our country, and deportation, anyone illegally entering our country. They shouldn't be rewarded for illegally entering our country. It's very important that they be legally vetted by Border Patrol, sheriffs, ICE, for any diseases that could be spread in America or around the world. This is why we have laws to protect the American people from viruses, pandemics, diseases, such as measles outbreaks, etc. Because that is why we pay the Department of Justice, the Executive Office, and the Congress and Senate to protect safety and welfare and health of every American, legal American citizen, and to uphold, defend, protect, and preserve the Constitution of the USA and the sovereignty of this great republic that once operated by the rule of law. And on that note, I want to say God bless you. God bless America. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you again on Wednesday from 12 to 1 p.m. right here on the good old West Coast in the good old USA. And remember, injustices can happen to you and they can happen to me, but together we can make a positive difference. Remember, you are never alone when you listen to Columbo Chronicles Live.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.